Good morning. Welcome to Gamification Talk Radio. This is your host, Monica Cornetti, and I want to welcome you to today's program. Today, you're going to hear part two of my interview with Tiagi. So if you haven't caught the first part, I'm going to encourage you to go back and listen to that. Some of the things that we're talking about in part two may not make entire sense to you if you haven't heard the first part. It might be a little bit difficult to connect the dots, but I want to encourage you to just sit back and enjoy and learn from the master of interactive training, learning and development, Tiagi. Thanks for joining us for part two.
If I'm looking at your definition of games and the different types of games, you're leaving some things out, it sounds like to me, of what we think about in games, things like fun and maybe relaxing or doing something social with friends or perhaps becoming a master, like the young guy from Dallas who just won the Masters in golf. Yeah, you know, so.
Yes. Yeah.
Why is that missing from your definition?
So if somebody asks me, should games be fun? Or should they be serious? My answer is yes. Should games be cooperative or competitive? My answer again is yes. So there are many variable characteristics, flexible, modifiable characteristics, and I don't believe in fun. And if you don't trust me, check with my wife. She keeps on saying the last time we had fun was 1954. So as a designer of learning games, Monica, my goal is to get people engaged, immersed, hooked on to the game. That is a desirable quality, but you can have a boring game. You can have a cutthroat game. You can have a game that does not relax you, makes you tense. By the way, if you ever live in Bloomington, Indiana, you will know basketball is not for fun. Mm. It is a religion. It's a matter of life and death. You don't get selected for the NCAA playoff. There is something wrong with you. The coach get fired, everybody writes nasty letters to the newspaper, things of that nature. So games, ideally, desirably, should have fun or engagement or immersion, but it is not a requirement. I like fun games. I like cooperative games. I like games with a somewhat loose structure. I like games where the process itself is intrinsically motivating. I like games that are simple. So simplicity, competition versus cooperation, these are all variables. There's an ancient Hindu saying which goes different strokes for different folks. So if you're teaching a bunch of engineers, you don't have them give a group hug, you don't have them have fun, you just tell them, here are the rules, here is the outcome, let's go get it.
Yeah, I know. And there, when you mention engineers, I just get a smile to my face because somehow I end up working with engineers quite a bit. And, you know, they give you nothing back. I mean, as far as an aspect. You know, you're looking, give me something. But then they, you know, they're coming up and they're shaking your hand saying, oh my gosh, that was so great. I loved it. I'm like, when did you love it? When were you, it was fun, when was it fun? I didn't see it. But, and that it's good that, you know, you just have to realize who the audience is. And when we talk about, you know, that's a term used in gamification, is to be player centric, to realize who your players are. When we, the biggest thing, my one colleague is really big into Dr. Reese and the 16 motivators. Dr. Reese is from...
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, and so Dr. Reese has a term called self-hugging. Understanding that term alone has caused or saved, rescued from conflict, because that self-hugging, what that means is that I'm this way, so I'm hugging myself. and just by the nature of how we're wired, if I'm this way and you're different, because of that need for consistency in me, well, if I'm right, you must be wrong. And so we try and change people. And instead of, my colleague has a phrase he uses, he says, don't change who they are, change where they are. Sometimes we need to get them into a different area, interacting differently, because we're trying to make them like us. And that happens all the time when we have a disagreement with somebody. We just can't, I just can't believe that you don't like to go hiking up mountains. What do you mean you don't hike up mountains? But you'd rather play chess or Scrabble than go hiking.
Yes.
What's wrong with you? Don't you want to be physically fit? Why would you not? You know, and it's just that, but that's
exactly
self-hugging at the max. And when we look at designing the games, we have to realize, well, who is this for? Who's going to be playing it? Okay, so we have different types of games. We have different elements in games. What about gamification? How are you defining gamification?
I go with your definition. Gamification is the application of game elements in order to get people do something outside of the game. So if you are talking about interfacing games, that is one type of gamification, that is to increase the productivity of the employees in an enjoyable, engaging, and equally importantly, in an ethical manner, in a fair, just type of a thing. So this is inner-looking type of gamification, which is adding all kinds of tangible, intangible, intrinsic, extrinsic types of things to a person's job. This has been around for a long, long, long time, from the time of the ancient Hindu philosopher Mary Poppins and Tom Sawyer and all of those people. And there is also the extrinsic, outside-looking type of gamification, which is primarily customer loyalty kind of gamification. How does McDonald's get more people buy more Big Macs in different parts of the world? And I think that is a third part, which is primarily what I call the looking at your belly button approach to gamification, which is self-hugging, which is how can I personally improve, develop, and become a better person, less obese, more wonderful, things of that nature. So these are inner, outer, and totally intrinsic type of gamification. These are different types of gamification, and I specialize in inner-looking gamification. And one of the things I found out is what are the job-related things, job-related competencies and things people should have so they will become more productive. I kept going around the world asking people, what are some of the universal skills people in different jobs should have? Somebody said teamwork. Somebody says leadership skills. Somebody says satisfying the customer. And eventually, it became very clear, doesn't matter what job you are doing, one universal skill you should have is the ability to learn. Learning is a job requirement for all jobs, especially in these days when everything keeps on changing rapidly. So I said, I'm going to be looking inwards to employees in my organization, but in that area, I'm going to cut across all levels of the hierarchy and help people learn better. So here comes the overlap between game-based learning and gamification, using games both as a training technique and also a motivational tool. So this is my getting mixed up with different areas, but clearly separating gamification and games and applying them to learning at the outcome.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If we look at that, what I have found, like for example, I'll be in Dallas next week doing a 3-day leadership training for a long-term client of mine. I do this class for them once a month, different locations. And what I know will be in the audience is a good mix of people who are sitting at the edge of their seat wanting to be better. And then at the mm-hmm. other end of the spectrum, I'll be talking to people who, you know, I affectionately call prisoners. But they act like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be here. And they don't really want to learn. Okay, so we have this group, like this ability to learn is a universal skill. We have some people like myself. I have to rein myself in. I love learning so much that I will do that and nothing else, which doesn't mm-hmm. get, you know, there's no, what good is that? It's like true but useless. I have my girlfriend, she calls it TBU. TBU, she throws that out, you know, true but useless information.
Yes.
Okay. And then you have the theologian that says that if you must play, you cannot play. Mm-hmm. So we have people who don't really want to learn, but we're trying to get them to learn by getting them to play.
Yes.
It's a fine line we're walking, isn't it?
It definitely is. As some of the critics of gamification say, it is exploitation, it is bribing, and there are times I justify what I'm saying by saying it is for their own good. Nowadays, if I go to a workshop, Monica, I ask them, how many of you are here because you are required to come here? How many of you are hostages? Mm-hmm. I use hostages instead of prisoners. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, I want you to realize that there is no compulsion for you to be here. If you don't want to be here, feel free to leave the room. If I'm not able to convince you, this has value to whatever you're doing, and if I'm not able to convince you, this is going to be something engaging and pleasant and useful and true, stick around here. Give me 5 minutes. Watch out for 5 minutes. And then you decide if you don't want it, leave. And if you need to be physically present here, if it is a requirement, I will be happy to lie to your manager that you were here actively participating in everything. And so this is participation by choice. And one of the other things I do, Monica, is I use very short games I call jolts that last for less than 3 minutes. And it teaches you the meaning of life. I start my workshop with a set of jolts, and people get quickly convinced that this is not going to be painful and this is going to be insightful.
Yeah, that's good. I call those illuminators.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Quick. Wow. You know, sometimes they're less than a minute, rarely, but it's just one of those. Quick point, get to it, they get it, they are, puts them in a whole different mindset then. It's sometimes the biggest aha moment that they have.
Hey, Monica, would you like my today's jolt? It lasts only 37 seconds. You ready?
Go ahead. You got 37 seconds, yeah.
Okay, you get 20 points if you can say the numbers 1 through 10 in the correct sequential order as quickly as you can.
One, two,
go
ten.
Ahead.
One,
yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Brilliant. Wonderful. You got 20 points. Keep the points safe. Would you like to make 200 points now?
Okay.
Same 10 numbers. And I want you to give me all of the 10 numbers, but this time in alphabetical order. Go ahead. If you can do it faster.
Okay.
Five, that concludes.
One, two, three. Yes. Good. All right.
Good. So I tell the folks, hey, folks, here is the point. I'm not going to teach you anything brand new. You already know most of the things I'm going to explain to you. We will jointly explore it. The reason you're not able to do it alphabetically as quickly as chronologically is that is what you're used to. I'm going to take the same concepts and have you change your mindset and apply the same skills, but in a different arrangement, different order, blah, blah, blah. And by this time, most people have a sheepish grin or get some insight or something like that.
Right.
And I continue from there.
Yeah, good. I like it. That's fun. Really fun. I'll do it later. I'll send it to you via email. Hey, I got it. Okay.
And primarily, I follow it up by saying, you need a mnemonic. You think of this, you write it down, think of this as a telephone number, a 10-digit telephone number, repeat it 18 times. So this is the fundamental of learning. Pay attention, want to master that, try to impress everybody at the next cocktail party with your ability to rattle off numbers in alphabetical order, have an external motivation, and all of those things.
That's fun. That's good. Okay, so keeping with the concept of the different types of gamification, you mentioned in games there's elements like engagement, immersion, process, cooperation. You even mentioned simplicity. Are there different elements that are desirable for your gamification design?
And primarily, my great insight is game design is not solving a problem. Game design is reconciling a paradox. Life is nothing but a set of paradoxes. For example, should games be fast or should they be slow and reflective? And in some conditions, some situation, you want to have a slow, reflective type of an activity. In some situation, for example, if I'm training you how to defuse an IED, how to defuse a bomb, I don't want to say, everybody sit down, let us reflect on this, let us do a brainstorming, everybody take time to suggest different ways of defusing a bomb. No, you want fast, quick, get it done type of a thing. So what is desirable for a game depends on three factors, Monica. One is, what is your training objective? And if your training objective requires unarmed combat, for example, I don't want that to be a cooperative game. I don't want that to be a slow game. I want it to be a fast shoot or get a shot type of a game. So the training objective is an important factor. The second factor in deciding which side of the polarities I want to go with is, who is the audience? If my players are engineers, I don't ask them, how do you feel about this? I ask them, what is the likely reaction of other people playing the game? And so with accountants, with engineers, I don't want it to have a lot of fun. But for people who are new hires, or younger generation or the Nintendo generation, I wanted to have a lot of fun and engagement. So the training objective, the type of participants, players, and the third element to me is what is your preference? I'm into self-hugging. I learned a new word. And I like certain types of games, and I don't want to torture myself into saying I'm going to create an abstract, complex simulation because I'm a flaky kind of a person. I'm going to create a fast, playful kind of activity. So if you're forcing yourself to do something which is not your talent, then that is going to show. I don't want to design three-dimensional chess as a game. I just want to design a two-dimensional, one-dimensional tic-tac-toe or a game where no effort is needed, that kind of a thing. So the training objectives, the audience preferences, and your own personal areas of expertise. I don't want to do a complex computer game. If you want to do a computer game, I hire a computer programmer and say, hey, here is the game. Here is how we play it on paper and pencil. And now I want you to do it on a computer.
Yeah, that's good. It's really good insight too, because for me, my favorite part of the game is the narrative or the story.
Exactly.
I love playing Clue. When we, you know,
yes.
Life, the game of life. I mean, those games, I play it again and again and again. Now, some I played because of that killer instinct, like Sorry. You know, we played Sorry. And I just wanted to be able to say, Sorry. You know, you got to go back. Any type of design I do. And in fact, I've incorporated that into certifications that we do and the training. I'm doing one tomorrow. And to me, for training programs, I think that narrative or story is a must-have. I'm sure it is not a must-have, but to me, it is. And I go to that right away. Somebody asked me about designing
yes.
a financial literacy program. I was like, okay, well, I need to know who this is for and what your objectives are in lieu of me knowing that just yet. I'm already designing this loop dog
yes.
that goes in there to see where's the cash go, how does it happen. Don't teach me accounting terms. I don't care about your accounting
mm-hmm.
terms. I know I need them to be financially literate, but what I really need to understand is where's the money going? How, what's legal, what's not legal? How do I need to, don't tell me what the name of the report is. Tell me what I'm going to get from that report that's going to help me to run my business. Then I don't want to just be literate. I want to be able
yes.
to use it. And so I went right away to that story, and I could see the
exactly.
gentleman was kind of looking at me like, well, I don't know if that's what I meant by gamification. And I could understand his point. I got it. But I know that I know I can get him where exactly he wants to go with it. And most people, especially small businesses, they struggle with finances
yes.
and understanding it. And financial literacy is not going to help understanding what does this mean to me as the business owner? What do I don't, I, it doesn't really matter if I understand that whole credit
yes.
debit thing. What does that mean to me? And having somebody help them solve that, because they have a mystery. It's a huge mystery.
Exactly.
For them.
Exactly. I recently did financial acumen for small business owners. We must be working in the same group of people. And my first attempt was to say, how can I put the narrative of Cinderella,
ooh.
Which is an ancient Hindu fairy tale, into this? But what we ended up doing was to say, hey, you are a forensic auditor who belong to the Department of Treasury of the government.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a balance sheet. Here is a profit and loss statement. Here is the journal entry. You have to find out how this dude is laundering the money.
That's
and
good.
This looks confusing. Don't worry. We will teach you just in time how to read a cash flow report, things of that nature. So Absolutely agree. You got to have a narrative to keep the gamification or the game holding together. And that is something you believe in, and that is something I believe in. Those who complain about making it trivial and doing a story are because they have no imagination. They are incapable of coming up with a story, even if their life depended on it.
Well, the thing is that once you start practicing it, it actually starts to come naturally. And I just wrote an article about this for something. I have to think of where that is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really helped me is what my best friend, his dad, for as long as I've known them, his dad in a crowd. So we were sitting there in a crowd eating ice cream cones. His dad looks at two people off to the right, and he starts creating a whole backstory about those people. He doesn't know anything about them, but he'll come up with the most outlandish, outrageous, laughing. But then we start watching them, and we actually start caring about those people. You know, it's like we're not going to meet them. We don't know who they are or anything. I just use that as a simple little technique because a lot of people do have that. You ask a child. You ask a child what's going on over there. Man, they're not going to hesitate for a second to tell us the backstory. And she wanted a dog, and he said no, she couldn't have a dog, and now she.
Yes. Yes, and many people who are listening to us right now may think this is an interview on gamification. Little do they know, you and I work for the agency, and I'm communicating the coded message on when our people will be landing in Timbuktu.
That's good. I love it. See, that's so good. Very, very good. Okay. I am out of time. I have a question I need to ask you. If you knew then what you know now when you were starting your career, would you do anything differently?
Nope. I, according to my wife, who is an expert in these areas, I suffer from a continuous state of denial. I would not want to have my life any way different. Mm-hmm. I will never become as famous or as rich as most of my classmates, but I'm having a ball, Monica, and even if nobody pays me nothing, I will still continue doing this.
Yeah. Even the stuff that I didn't want to learn, it's amazing how I need that at times. Like, oh my gosh, I know what they're talking about. Like, I had to design this curriculum for infrared guns. Okay, talk about, oh my God, I cried, I didn't want to do it, but I did it. And now, you know, I find that people are talking about, and I can have a conversation. I know what they're talking about. It's amazing to me. So it's like things that we didn't even necessarily want to do, it still has its relevance and its purpose and will help somebody else along the way too. So that's really good.
Yes,
really good. All right, to wrap this up, a final thought on gamification and people who are in gamification consultancy or designing games. Is there a final thought you have for them?
Just do it, in the famous Nike philosophy. Mm-hmm. Just go ahead and do it. Don't analyze too long, and let the inmates run the asylum. The key thing in designing games is playtesting. So one of my other motto is build your airplane while you're flying it.
Ooh, build your airplane while you're flying it?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going flying with you anymore.
No wonder Boeing is not one of my clients.
Funny, that's good. Very good. I know. I think that's one of the key things, that just that concept of an MVP, a minimum viable product. I tease about being a perfectionist. I just want excellence. I'm not a perfectionist. I just really want it to be excellent. But we can't roll it out excellent. It won't be. It needs to have a chance to become that way. And it becomes that way by people getting their hands on it and playing it.
Good.
Oh, Tiagi, thank you so much.
Hey, listen, thank you, Monica.
Down in the information below is Tiagi's contact information. Reach out, connect with him. on Twitter. His website is soundofjazzy.com. Like I said, there's a ton of free information. You can connect with me. My contact information is below also. We're doing some live certifications. We have one in Austin the first week in May. We also have online coming the 13th of May. So if you're looking to get certified and earn yourself some SHRM, HRCI, or ATD research credits, you can do that. If you're in learning and development, that all made sense. If you're not, don't worry about it. But you want to get certified, come join us. Tiagi, thank you for your time today. I have thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Thank you very much. My pleasure, Monica.
I can't wait till I meet you in person. You going to Mississauga in October?
Yes.
I'll be there too.
Wonderful.
Good. See you then. Thanks so much. See you next week, everybody.